The hour of 10:15 have arrived. We will call the tax committee meeting to order. Representative Joy moves the minutes of March 6th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are passed. We will just go in order, which is kind of strange for me. We'll just start with House File 169. Representative Robbins moves House File 169. And I believe Representative Robbins has an amendment. So Robbins moves House File 169. Is the A1 amendment yours?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, could you just let us know what that does?
Yes. Members, this is a technical correction to the bill. When we first drafted the bill, I inadvertently didn't realize that sports-themed tip boards were already exempt from the section, and so we just have to make a technical correction because they weren't getting taxed under the net receipts, and when we wiped out the whole net receipts section, it inadvertently would have taxed the sports-themed tip boards at the flat rate when the intention is to, they weren't originally taxed, so we don't want to add a tax to them.
So, any questions to the H0169A1 author's amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill in the shape the author would like the bill. So, to your bill, Representative Robbins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This has been a long journey for the charities in our district. As some of you who are newer might not know, but the state legislature originally legalized e-pull tabs in 2012, and the intention was to create this new form of gaming that would help, and then it taxed added to the charity taxes already paid to the state, because the state had to pay off $500 million of the $1 billion in the bond for the Viking Stadium. E-pull tabs were incredibly popular, and so popular that the state was making a lot of money, and we were able to pay the stadium bond off more quickly than anticipated. And rather than allowing that system of gaming to continue, and now charities that their taxes were not being able, having to go to pay off the bond, it would have freed up more money for charities in our community. They took away the e-pull tab gaming in 2023 session, and so now that number one source of revenue, 96% of all charitable gaming members is from e-pull tabs in the state, or pull tabs. I have the number here somewhere. And so rather than let that continue and charities reap the benefit, that was taken away, and effective January 1, 2025, the open all e-pull tabs are now illegal. And so this giant source of revenue for our charities is taken away. We pulled the rug out from under them once the stadium was paid off, but we didn't do anything to change the taxes. So net receipts, just to level set for anyone who doesn't know, right now charities pay on combined net receipts for receipts not more than $87,500, 8% tax to the state general fund. If it's between $87,500 and $122,500, they pay 17% to the general fund. Up to $157,500, it's 25% goes to the general fund. And anything they make over $157,500 is a 33.5% tax on our charities to the general fund. We are making money for the state on the backs of our charities. And this has been going on for a really long time, members. And before I was a legislator, I didn't know this. I thought when you played these charitable games, the money stayed in your community. I had no idea until I got here. This was a huge moneymaker for the state. And our communities need this money. No one knows better than the local charities how to give this money out and make a difference in our communities, whether it's for sports or for scholarships or for the things that benefit veterans. They are much better equipped to solve problems in our local community than to put all this money in the general fund. So I've had many bills over the years to eliminate the tax, to have a flat tax, to lower the tax rates. We've gone through this ground so many times for those of you who have been around. So this bill is sort of the middle ground attempt, and it's to get rid of the combined net receipts tiered taxes, which goes from 8% to 33.5%, and just put a flat tax. So it's not eliminating taxing on charitable gaming and the state getting a cut, but the cut will now be 5% under my bill, which I think is incredibly reasonable. And I just want to remind members that as part of getting rid of e-poll tabs in 2023, charities were told, oh, well, in the 2024 bill, we'll give you $40 million as part of the sports betting to ease some of the pain. That never happened. Charities got nothing. Veterans groups got nothing, as we keep seeing in this committee over and over and over. So I'm asking for your support today to help us help charities keep more of the money in our communities and limit the amount going to the general fund to a flat 5%. Thank you, members.
Thank you. And we're going to go to testimony from testifiers, but I think Chair Stevenson has a question here.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just have to correct the record on a few things. My friend, Representative Robbins, I'm hopeful, was inadvertently misstating a few things, but there were several really significant misstatements in that opening remarks. Representative Robbins said several times that e-poll tabs were taken away, suggesting they were taken away in their entirety. That's not true. A couple features were modified, but you can play e-poll tabs today in all the places you could on December 31st of last year. Those couple features, I'm not trying to minimize them, but we should be very clear that e-poll tabs were not taken away. She also said that e-poll tabs were 96% of charities' revenue. That's not true. In fact, until 2023, paper poll tabs were a larger proportion of charitable gambling receipts, net receipts, than e-poll tabs. There's an annual report that the Gambling Control Board puts out. I have the 2024 one open in front of me. E-poll tabs surpassed paper poll tabs in 2023, but still it's just shy of a 50-50 split. It's about 55%, I'd say, ballparking it. It's a graph in front that I was looking at, not a percentage chart. But it looks to me about a 55-45 split between paper and e-poll tabs. Representative Robbins also said that the charities got nothing. That's also not true. We passed a $15 million tax cut in 2023, that was effective July 1, 2023. So they've had a year and a half of that tax cut. July 1, 2024, we capped developer fees, which was another significant savings to the charities, millions of dollars worth of savings. I did support additional tax cuts for charities, so I'm not saying that there shouldn't be more tax cuts. But I think it's important that we get the record correct. We also do have the preliminary numbers for January of 2024, the first month under these new regulations, and the decline in e-poll tab revenue was about 10%. So it was just not nearly as bad as what was just stated. And I think that that's important that we look at those facts and figures. Again, there's a case to be made for changes in the way that we tax charities. I have supported that. It was in the sports betting bill last year. So I'm not trying to say that this is all a bad idea. I just don't want us to have in the record things that are so blatantly untrue as saying that we got rid of e-poll tabs or they constitute 96% of revenues or the charities got nothing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. What we're going to do is we're going to let Representative Robbins respond, and then we're going to go to testimony. And I'm going to try to move things along. We will have a full, free, and fair hearing, of course, as always. But I'm going to be looking down the list here to see if there's folks that have driven some distance. We'd want to get them before us. So, Chair Robbins.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. I did misstate The 96%, I was looking for my notes and I didn't have it in front of me. So I had planned on correcting it when I got the microphone again. But it is 96% of charitable revenue for gaming is from pull tabs. And again, about 45 is from the paper and 55 is from the E. So that's true. But the E pull tabs are what really was driving the excitement around this and where the huge gains in revenue came from. And the estimate of revenue loss, yes, for the first month it was 10%, but in the forecast from last summer, the state forecast revenue projected a decline in charitable gaming to the general fund of 25%. So there's expected significant revenue loss from this. So, and I do want to acknowledge that there were some other changes made on the cap on the developer's fee, and that helps, but the real money was from these open all features that were taken away. And so, yes, pull tabs and e-pull tabs will continue to exist, but the design of the game and the changes that were made have significantly projected to reduce the revenues to charities, and that's what we are here discussing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and we will get back to members' questions. I'm not cutting off members' questions, but I would like to get into the testimony, and I have on my list a Rachel Jenner, Dr. Christy Janigo, Tim Engstrom, Jim Probst, Wendy Dolan, and Kristen Ringler. Is there anyone else in the audience that I missed that wish to testify for the bill or with concerns on the bill? Okay, let's start out with Rachel Jenner. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Executive Director, Allied Charities of Minnesota. To your testimony, or Chair Robbins.
Mr. Chair, we had one name that wasn't on the list.
Heidi Zwartsky. She's with the Northeast Minneapolis Lions Community Foundation.
And you think you can just come up and be first?
No, sorry, I'm
no,
Rachel Jenner.
No, she's Rachel Jenner. She's just mentioning that someone was not listed in your list.
Oh, you're not Heidi.
I'm not Heidi, no,
I'm Rachel. We must have order.
Yes, thank you.
So who's this
that.
Heidi we're talking about?
Yes, Heidi Zworski, I believe, was missing from the list.
Heidi Zworski?
Yes.
With who?
Northeast Minneapolis Lions Community Foundation.
Okay, and we will put Heidi on the list here.
Appreciate
and
it.
I thought, Rachel, you being Heidi, we were being quite bold.
But, that would be correct.
Yes, okay. Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Jenner. I am the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota.
And you are first.
And I am first today. I'm here to represent the nearly 1,200 charities across the state that rely on charitable gambling to support their communities and their missions. I'd like to thank Representative Robbins for bringing this bill forward and consistently supporting us in an effort for tax relief and reformation of the tax laws as they are. We strongly support House File 169 and the tax relief that it's contained in that bill. Sports gambling had bipartisan support at the end of last session. It included historic tax relief, which is critical to ensuring that our charities can contribute more to their missions than they pay in taxes. Unfortunately, that bill failed, so we are now working to make this a standalone tax issue. Minnesota charities currently pay $195 million in taxes each year. And according to the Gambling Control Board's 2024 report, the organization's taxes and fees, those payments exceeded the available funds for their mission by $67 million. As you've probably heard just now about the new e-pull tab restrictions that were legislated in 2023, and those took effect January 1st of this year. In the first month under these new rules, we have heard from charities that are seeing an average 20% drop in their revenue, some as much as 40% year over year. And considering that last year our growth in just e-pull tab revenue was 20%, I'm sorry, 13%. The year prior, that growth in that revenue was 20%, and now you're looking at being down another 20 to 40%. Those are significant losses because we were seeing double-digit growth every year in that revenue, and it was the fastest-growing segment of our revenue. E-pull tab games are popular. You'll hear from gambling managers who have players in their bars complaining that they don't like the games, And we are, as I know Tim Engstrom has talked about before from the American Legion, we're trying to encourage people to play the games. There's always going to be some negativity that comes with change, but we are doing our best to make these games fun. The manufacturers have worked hard to put together new games with what's allowed, and we are working to make them fun. But there is a segment of players who are not playing the games, and that is, I think, why we're seeing those 20, 30, 40% losses. And these losses directly impact, as you probably well know, veteran services, youth sports, fire departments, and essential community programs. This reduction means fewer resources for the grants and scholarships that these charities are providing. I have included today an example from exemplary charitable work from the Claremont Chamber of Commerce. They're a town of about 500 people, and they are donating $223,000 in their small community. The list of those that they are helping, if you refer to that, it's extremely diverse. They have the Humane Society, veterans programs, lots of school groups, programs for the homeless. The list goes on and on. But the biggest benefactor of their efforts was the state of Minnesota, who taxed them $364,000 in that same year that they donated $223,000. And I have said before, and I'll continue to say, the call that I get the most from charities in Minnesota is, when will the legislature change our taxes and reduce our taxes and stop taxing us to death? Minnesota ranks number one in the nation for charitable gambling, demonstrating its importance to our local communities. Our tax rates in Minnesota are four times higher than any other state in the nation. The 5% flat tax would simplify tax reporting. It would make it a lot easier for these charities to budget versus progressive rates when they're going through the year and want to make sure that they understand where they're going to end up and how much they need to donate so that they don't pay federal tax. They have to get that money donated by the end of the year, so a flat tax would be much appreciated for how it would simplify their reporting and their budgeting. And it would return funds, obviously, to local communities to enhance their ability to serve, and most importantly, taxes would no longer be our biggest expense. So we urge you to support Representative Robbins' bill and tax reduction for Minnesota charities so that they can do their great work all across our state. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Jenner? Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you, Ms. Jenner. I'm just curious about, because this is something that happened a lot in 2023. As some of you remember, I was the chair of the tax committee at that time when we made the changes to e-poll tabs. And people came and said there will be a 20 to 80% revenue loss because of these changes. And you just cited 20, 30, 40% losses. What we've seen is that the actual numbers that are from the Gambling Control Board, which are based on measured outcomes, are saying 9 or 10%. So I'm curious, where does the 20, 30, 40% losses come from? And, you know, further, just sort of like want people to know that when you cite inaccurate numbers repeatedly, then, you know, there are questions about your testimony. And so I'm curious about where they come from. Thank you.
Ms. Jenner.
Thank you. Yes, so what I'm speaking to are individual charities that have contacted us and seeing their numbers. The industry as a whole, the Gambling Control Board reported January was down 13%, to be exact, as an industry. There are organizations who are obviously down less than 20% in order to get to that industry-wide 13. But I have organizations who have sent me their numbers, and they're down 38%, 30%. I had a bar owner call me recently and say, what's going on? My rent check dropped in half. His rent at that site was down 40%. And that speaks to the players, right? Players at different sites have different opinions about the games. Some are continuing to play, some are not. And that's leading to different results for different organizations.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Hewitt, and then we'll go to the next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really quick, Ms. Jenner, just curious, and I know there's going to be other testifiers that might be able to answer this better, but is this an effect of our economy possibly? Are the door numbers up for food and stuff in these places, but they're just not gambling? Is there any, I mean, we're trying to look at every finger here. Can you tell me if door numbers are down or receipts are down for food and alcohol?
Ms. Jenner?
Thank you. I unfortunately do not know on the bar's side whether or not they're seeing losses. Again, I think ideally we would have more time and see how this plays out over a longer period, because obviously 1 month is a very tight window to look at. I think we need to get, you know, a quarter, 2 quarters into this year, then we'll have better data on, you know, whether or not this is a lasting loss or, you know, how it's going to play out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Hewitt. Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Jenner, we'll go to Dr. Christie. Help me with the last name.
Janigo.
That easy, okay. Welcome, committee. Please state who you represent, your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Christie Janigo, and I'm a third-generation Army veteran. I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair. And I'm an assistant county veteran service officer for my day job, where I help some of the state's most vulnerable veterans find housing, navigate their involvement with the justice system, and access life-changing veteran benefits. First, I want to thank Representative Robbins and all the lawmakers working on bills this year and years past to deliver tax cuts for Minnesota charitable gambling operations. We have been advocating for meaningful, significant tax cuts for years. The reduction of our taxes to 5% and the simplification of the structure to a flat rate, as outlined in this bill, would have a far-reaching positive impact on our posts and communities we support across Minnesota with these funds. Our more than 50,000 American Legion Department of Minnesota members agreed to prioritize advocating these tax cuts above all other things we want for the service member, military, and veteran community again this year, because we think it will have the biggest impact. There are 537 American Legion posts throughout Minnesota, and 193 of them have charitable gambling operations. Those operations account for roughly 10% of all charitable gambling in Minnesota. While some say, oh, it's just gambling, we respectfully disagree. Charitable gambling is inextricably linked with crucial emergency supports for veterans. Our donations are how we carry out our four pillars of our charitable mission: Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation, National Security, Children and Youth, and Americanism. We do worry often that the general public does not understand our issues, so whenever we have someone coming alongside us with their support, it really matters. In my day job, I work with veterans who have had everything go wrong in their lives. They sustained physical and mental disabilities during service that led to self-medicating with alcohol or other drugs, which led them to not be able to work, or family issues and justice involvement, which led to housing instability and food insecurity. My partners and I fight to keep some of these veterans alive, under roofs, and out of jail. As many benefits as there are specifically for the veterans community, they are often not enough, or else it takes so long for the benefits to come in that there could be months of a veteran living on the streets. That is when I turned to charitable gambling operations of our Legion and VFW posts to ask them to pitch in, to save a home, to get the power turned back on, to prevent an eviction, to feed small children, to make that critical car repair for the veteran living out of their vehicle in the dead of winter and sub-zero temps in Minnesota. These funds are a big part of how we reached an effective end to veteran homelessness last fall in Hennepin County, with Ramsey County and the state of Minnesota as a whole hopefully soon able to make such a declaration. With heavy state and local taxes on top of the other bills we must pay, these expenses handcuff our posts from helping the veterans in their community who are suffering. And I can tell you that I've recently lost veterans I've tried to save, and their losses, they will always haunt me. Is this really how we'll treat those who risked and sacrificed everything, including their lives? Is it not the government's responsibility to get out of the way when a charitable organization can meet the needs in the community that they can't fulfill? Although most of us stopped wearing the uniform years ago, veterans have a deep-seated need to continue serving their communities, and the changes to e-poll tabs that were enacted at the beginning of this year do have our people worried that our mission will be compromised, and some of our posts have seen around a 20% drop in revenues. I can assure you that the cap to gaming fees and the very small tax cuts that were passed were not sufficient. As you may have heard in the past, the funds we donate pay for honor guards at burial ceremonies, outdoor recreation for disabled veterans, suicide prevention programs, and stopgap funding for homeless veterans. We donate to area schools programs to help housing and food insecure children. We support nonprofit service organizations near our posts. We fund youth sports scholarships and equipment for local fire departments. We also fund local parades, firework displays, county fairs, fire equipment, school flags, marching band uniforms, football headsets, international sister city efforts, and wheelchair-friendly playground equipment. What I am describing to you represents the best of America, and these traditions need to continue. Thank you again for hearing this bill.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for your service. The funds right now that you have, do they all go back into the community, or is there any operating costs to it?
Doctor?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There are some expenses that we have to pay for. We do, some posts with gambling operations do pay their property taxes out of charitable gambling. We are allowed to use a small amount of our gambling revenues to do upkeep of our buildings, many of which are falling apart. We do have a separate bill that is traveling separately for lawful purpose expenditure expansion because we just can't afford some of the capital expenditures for our buildings right now.
Representative Woody.
Thank you. And so this additional 5% would be able to be used in the community to continue to do some good in all of our communities. And I know when this first came up last time, and we're always up here trying to adjust and see how some of our policies come into play. It was one of the number one issues I was hearing. So to see 5% go back in our communities, all of our communities throughout the state, I think would do a lot of good. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. Just on that point that Representative Whitty just asked about administration, I'm wondering if you can just run through, you know, how much of the proceeds from gambling do you spend on administration, rent, buying games, you know, salaries, that kind of thing, in a typical, you know, those things are all allowed uses, I believe, of the proceeds. And so if you could just flesh out what those uses are and give us an idea of, you know, how much of the proceeds from the gambling go to those operational kind of administrative and overhead and personnel costs, please.
Doctor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomez, I'd like to defer that question to the next testifier, who's the gambling manager of the Bloomington Post, one of our largest charitable gambling operations for Legion Posts.
Is that okay? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to Mr. Tim Engstrom. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
I'm Tim Engstrom. I'm the gambling manager for American Legion Post 550. And may I answer that question, Chairman?
Certainly, certainly.
The state has a star rating system that will help, you know, anyone looking at it tell how much of the proceeds go toward of the money that's left over for donations that go toward the charities and the rest that goes toward administration. So if you have a 5-star rating, then you have more than 50% of that money going toward the public interests, like nonprofits or schools or whatever. And then if you have a 4-star rating, that would be 40%. If you have a 3-star rating, it's 30%. And so the lower the rating, you can kind of tell how much of the charity is putting toward the good. My post has a 5-star rating. You know, some of the posts, if there was a 6- or 7-star rating, they would have that. So you can kind of tell the ratio by the star rating.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that explanation. So you're saying that, like, if you have a 2-star rating, then you're spending 80% of the proceeds on administration overhead?
If you have a 2-star rating, I'm sorry, Chair. If you have a 2-star rating, the Gambling Control Board will put you on probation too.
Okay.
You could lose your license.
Okay, but
Chair,
like,
Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But that's the general thing, is if you have a 3-star rating, you're spending 70% of the proceeds on admin and overhead. If you have, et cetera, 4-star, then you're spending 60% of the proceeds on overhead and administration.
Chairman?
Mr. Engstrom.
Yes, that's generally true, except that sometimes you have situations where maybe a organization like a sports booster organization is really trying to save up for a large expense like an ice rink. So they may have a bad or a lower than normal rating 1 year and then have a knock it out of the park rating the following year. So I've seen that happen, like at the Albert Lee Civic Center.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that answer, just as we are, you know, in a lot of different parts of the legislature right now talking about nonprofit organizations that receive government benefits and what the administrative costs of running those organizations are and what the kind of overhead is when there is a contribution from the public. So I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your answer.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Mr. Engstrom, to your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I too like to correct the record. Back in 2023, the open all button was received the sunshine of the committee process as we debated it the entire session. But the two other items that were taken away from ETABS were the free plays and bonus games. And that legislation was inserted at the end of the session in the cloak of darkness, which, as you guys will agree, this is not how we should pass laws in Minnesota. Let's do it in the open, the way we were supposed to do it. So if you know me, you know I'm a longtime journalist, and I believe in sunshine. So the Minnesota taxes charitable gambling starting at 8.5%, but as the months go by, it soon climbs up to its top rate of 33.5% of cumulative net receipts. This means the money after the prizes are awarded, that's what net receipts are. Some states call it adjusted gross revenue. So some cities even charge an additional 10%. So nearly half of your money is going toward government purposes, and a lot of these charitable organizations are doing things as volunteers. So we're essentially taxing volunteer labor. People who hear about other states are surprised at how astronomically high Minnesota is. Other states typically only tax enough to cover the burden of the regulatory agency. North Dakota is around 1%, and it slightly changes about depending on how much it costs to regulate gambling. Kentucky is a tiny fraction of 1%. New Hampshire is 7% on bingo, and $15 for every $3,500 made in paper pull tabs, which works out to less than 0.5%. Mississippi charges 1% for bingo and 2.4% on e-pull tabs. Virginia has various rates for different kinds of charitable gambling, but most of them are at 0.75%. In Ohio, the rules change from city to city or county to county, but after looking at city ordinances, and I looked at quite a few, it appears that local jurisdictions rarely tax the revenue from charitable gambling at all, probably because cities, counties, schools, and local nonprofits benefit from the donations. In Washington State, the state calculates each group's gambling receipts on various types of games and uses it to determine an annual licensing fee up to a cap figure. So instead of a tax, it's a fee. Poll tabs are calculated at 1.515% with a cap of $16,000 annually. Bingo is at 0.488% with a cap of $17,600. Cities and counties may collect a tax on poll tabs of up to 10% and for bingo, 5%. In Ellensburg, for example, the city charges 1%. Ellensburg is the home of Central Washington University, you may know. New York charges 3% on all forms of charitable gambling except pull tabs, where the rate is 5%. New York! Alaska is at 3% and handles it all through distributors. Indiana only sends a rental rate, but doesn't tax charitable gambling. Louisiana has a state fee of $75 with state laws, but it is taxed and supervised at the city or parish level. Baton Rouge, for instance, taxes it at 1.5% to cover the cost of supervision. I don't have this in my written testimony, but they even have one of the categories that you're allowed to donate to is for the purposes of Mardi Gras. So,
Pennsylvania. Mr. Engstrom, could you just maybe sum it up saying like we're really high?
Okay, yes. We're really high. Pennsylvania, they have... no taxes, but they do have taxes on a for-profit tax. The taverns can do for-profit gambling, but for the clubs that are nonprofit clubs, they don't tax them, but they are required to spend 60% on public interest, and the other 40% the charity can use for their purposes. So in summary, I'll just say Minnesota Charities could do so much more for our communities if you only let us. Please support House File 169, and thank you.
And thank you very much for your testimony. And folks are testifying, if you take your speech, cut it in about half. Because we're going to try and get some of these bills done today. At the rate we're going, we will only be on this one and not have it finished. So, any questions for Mr. Engstrom?
Any questions? Yes.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
Let's
you.
Go to Jim Probst. And hit your points, hit them hard. And then we need to move on because the way this is going. Yeah. No, we're not coming back tonight. Representative Herr.
I'll make it as brief as possible.
But yeah, but we want to hear what you got to say, but sure. Let's sum it up a little bit.
My name is Jim Probst. I'm president of South Robert Street Business Association, the same Robert Street that borders this Capitol building. So we are an inner ring, first ring suburb group. A lot of people view charitable gambling as being an outstate situation, a lot of it going to hunting, you know, that sort of thing. That isn't what we do. What we do is we're lucky enough to raise $300,000 through charitable gambling that went to our community. Everything from the Islamic Student Association at Two Rivers High School to sponsoring Kaposha Days in South St. Paul, Explore West St. Paul Days. Last year we gave to the local school district of 197 $63,000 to different groups and different organizations. It's not a rich district. Very good schools, but they need help. And we're very proud that we're able to do that with the money we raise. We also give to organizations such as Neighbors, Neighbors Inc., Neighborhood House, which is about 2 miles from here, 360s Communities, and Open Door. We did an event where we help pack 37,000 meals for our community. Not going off to Africa or Asia or anything like that, but going to the food banks here in St. Paul. We think it's really important that the dollars we raise go to our local community. The one thing I'll say is that last month we paid, or we were able to give out $39,000 worth of dollars to our community for all sorts of different organizations and that sort of thing. But we paid $57,000 in taxes and in fees. If we could just balance that out a little bit, I'd love to go down to Neighbors Inc. and give them a check right now for $10,000. I think that would be a wonderful opportunity. food need in this country is only getting worse. I'm meeting with Neighbors later on today to hear how we might be able to help them even more. But if we could lessen the taxes that we pay to the state of Minnesota and allow us to give more funds to our local community, I love that. So I thank you for your time.
Questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you, sir. Let's go to Wendy Dolan. Please state your name and who represent for the record, please.
Hi, good morning. My name is Wendy Dolan. I'm with the Ham Lake Lions Club in Ham Lake, Minnesota. I've got Ms. Ringler here. She's next on your list. We supported her family as Ham Lake Lions. Her young adult daughter lives with a disorder with no known cure and spends the majority of her time in a wheelchair. So we were able to help cover the cost of a modified bicycle that gives her daughter and her caregivers a way to enjoy the outdoors with no wheelchair transfers necessary or other bulky equipment needed. We used our charitable gambling funds in order to pay for this, and without charitable gambling funds, we wouldn't have been able to help her family. In order to keep doing things like this, we need tax relief, and we need it as quickly as possible. The changes that were made to the electronic games in early January are already significantly impacting our ability to give back to our community. We are unfortunately one of the organizations that took roughly a 40% hit year to date, looking year over year. And in being in the bar and hearing conversations with customers saying that the new games are terrible and just outright refusing to play them anymore is really frustrating. It's also really frustrating that every month my organization pays more to the state in taxes than we have to give back and donate to our community. It's also important to add that what we do in our community as a Lions Club is it's so much bigger than just one modified bicycle for one family. The donations that we're giving, we're helping to end homelessness. We're partnering with other organizations, helping individuals with disabilities. We're protecting victims of domestic violence. We donate to our food shelves, our local schools, scholarships, youth sports, churches. The list goes on and on. So again, we're asking for this tax relief right now so that we can keep supporting all these great causes that are so near and dear to our hearts and our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for the testifier? And Kristen, you're
yes,
next.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm Kristen Ringler. I'm Olivia's mom. And, sorry. We have a 20-year-old daughter with a really rare, icky disease that took everything away from her at two. And we fought for years just to get her a bike. And I don't even remember how I found Wendy. Wishes and More. Actually, it's a wonderful, also another charitable, wonderful company that helped out. But they basically partnered with the Ham Lake Lions to help fund this bike. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. This bike is $15,000. Because guess what? Her whole wheelchair goes on the front of it. It's made in the UK. It's on a ship right now coming over to arrive in Madison in April. And then it'll be delivered to Olivia. It's taken us a year to get it, which is okay. But we've been fighting for 5 years. We've tried and tried other things. Everything's been denied. This was our first opportunity in her whole entire life to give her some really cool, kind of some independence. Not entirely, but she can use, nobody has to transfer her. Nobody has to, you know, it's not a two-person thing because that's how we have to carry her and lift her as two people. This is just putting her wheelchair on the, there's a little ramp on the front of the bike. And we found this at a bike expo at Gillette Hospital put on right before COVID hit. And she lit up like a light bulb, like just phenomenal. And so this has just been a huge blessing to finally get her a bike that maybe your kids, grandkids, whatever, they all have. And it's just been such an amazing opportunity that we could use these funds that we didn't even know existed. And there's so much more, I think, that can be done for this disabled community. We have a lot of friends and family that have no idea what's out there. But if this is something you guys would entertain and let it, and allow for this is just unimaginable what good we could, these charitable companies can all do. So I'm just a parent. But thank you for your time.
You said that wrong. You said just a parent.
I am a huge parent. I am a, I'm a warrior for my kid.
Awesome. That's so, better.
That's what
okay. So thank. Any questions for Ms. Dolan or Ms. Ringler?
Sorry.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I really appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
Now we'll go to Heidi. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning. I'm Heidi Zaworski with the Northeast Minneapolis Community Foundation.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Today I stand before you with a heavy heart, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota charities that are suffocating under the overwhelming tax rate, nearly double that of any business corporation in Minnesota. But you already know all of that. What you may not fully grasp is how the request for funds raised by charitable gaming have dramatically changed over the past decade. Our requests used to be for help for parades, festivals, lunches for teachers, wonderful and honorable cause, no doubt. However, today, charities are filling critical voids for essential services and needs. In the past, we provided packages for homeless youth filled with beef sticks, cheese, snacks, hand warmers, and socks. These days, those bags are filled with Narcan, rubber gloves, syringes, and service numbers for suicide prevention. We replace old football helmets because they no longer meet safety standards without them. And the school would have had to close the high school football program down without them. We're helping local social service centers in our community pay their employees for another month just to stay open to serve our community. We're filling backpacks when our students leave the schools on Friday with food for them for the whole entire weekend and for that of some of their siblings. We provided, these are the needs of today, basic and critical. The voices making these requests for funds are more desperate and it's more urgent. The thank yous and words of appreciation are louder and come with tears, letting us know, I do not know what I would have done without you. I've exhausted all of my options. The waiting time was too long. I didn't meet the qualifications because I have a job. We provided rent for a woman who fell and broke her arm. She didn't want the full rent. She just wanted some rent. She just needed to get through the month. She couldn't work, and without that work, she didn't have the money to pay her rent. She came in 5 times and thanked us in person for that little tiny donation, but it made a huge difference. No longer are these charitable organizations just frosting on the cake. They are the entree. They fill the voids where there are no other options. They are life-saving tools for our youth. They are new fire trucks. They are new safety equipment, new mental health tools. They are the food on our tables. They are the hearing aids, the glasses, the jackets, the boots, the blankets, the necessities of life that we sometimes take for granted. I ask you not to take these charitable dollars for granted. These are precious and valuable. Help us keep these funds in our community with some tax relief. We are not oblivious to the fact that the hideous high tax charged to nonprofits go to pay for other things. We understand that. I ask you to do your due diligence and research what those tax dollars are actually being used for, where they go, before you deny our request for tax relief. I know that as a club, we've requested that information and we've never, ever gotten a response. Educate us on the impact those dollars have in our communities. Educate yourself. Hear our plea. We need tax relief to provide basic services. That is what the 2025 charitable organizations look like today. Thank you for your time and attention.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, so that's the list of witnesses here. So does the department, well, first of all, is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns? And then we'll go to member questions here in a second. Is the department want to weigh in on this? Okay, thank you. Now we'll go to member questions. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Robbins for bringing this bill forward. I know that, you know, the legislature here, we never have a solution that works for everyone and all the time. So I appreciate your effort in trying to do this. I will just say that there's a part of me that is a little bit torn about what we're doing here, what we're asking for. And I think that all of the organizations and people who spoke to did a very good job of explaining the community benefits and who they're working with. And in my comments is not to invalidate anybody's experience or what they've been through and how they contribute, but it is also not lost upon me that the people who have been here in front of the committee, there's no one who looks like me, right? And that and organizations in my community who participate in charitable gambling because they had no idea this is even a thing so that they can do things that benefit their communities. And when I think about the intersection of taxes and what we're doing and how we want to make sure our nonprofit organizations continue to be able to do their good mission, I also know that the taxes and the tax breaks that we have and the tax we collect go to programs in which people like my community, like my veterans, are not considered veterans. They fought in a secret war. They saved American soldiers. My grandfather was a colonel, never received one benefit from the United States, and he died never being recognized as a veteran. And yet he had soldiers, hundreds of soldiers who died in order to save one American pilot. And so these people don't participate in charitable gambling. They have significant needs, but the taxes we collect will go to programs that impact them, like being on Medicaid or being on Medicare, charitable like health care that is provided to them, or food shelves or different places. And so I would like for us to maybe, I feel like we're saying you're taking from me and then you're not, you know, and we're trying to do these good things, but when we also then change some of these tax rates, it's also taking from people who look like me, people who then don't get to participate in these things, people who don't have organizations raising for cause like them. Like, my veterans don't get any mental health support at all from any charitable organizations because they don't have any access to that, right? So, like, I just want us to think about the balance of how we do taxes and then who gets included and who doesn't. And I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm not saying this isn't a good bill. I'm just asking us to maybe think about that and who doesn't get to participate in these types of organizations. And while we were in this committee, I actually texted a number of our Hmong nonprofit organizations that serve our veterans and serve different groups, and none of them had ever even heard of charitable gambling. And so, like, when we ask ourselves, well, who's missing? And we always say, well, people should ask if they don't know. If you don't know, you don't know to ask, right? And so I just wanted to put that out there for us to sort of think about that, because when I think about people using charitable, funds to build hockey rinks, which I'm not saying is wrong, but yet my veteran can't get any support in housing, like, I think, like, well, the other ways in which the taxes are collected are going to those types of people that don't participate in this. So that was a really long kind of comment, but I just wanted to put that out there as we think about how all of the ways taxes sort of intersect with each other and who they're helping and who they don't help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Any other questions from members? I'll go to Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Robbins, for bringing this bill in front of us. And thank you to everybody who came today and testified. And, thank you for sharing some of the good work that you're able to do in communities across the state with the proceeds from charitable gambling. We appreciate just hearing more about your work. I just wanted to mention, because the last testifier said that they've requested to know what it is that their taxes pay for, the taxes that they pay, and that they've never received a response to that. And so this is a bill that, if it was implemented as it's brought forward, would reduce tax collections by $300 million in each biennium in the budget window. And, that's a significant amount of money any way you slice it. And it goes into the general fund, and the general fund pays for the things that Minnesotans need from their government, which are significant, especially, veteran populations and especially people who are aging, as we see that those are, the expenses associated with caring for people with disabilities and people who are aging are the most kind of the part of our budget that's increasing the most quickly. And we, as you probably know, are looking down, a big mismatch between our revenues and our program costs in the out biennium. And a lot of those program costs are for people with disabilities and elders. So if you're wondering where this money goes to, it goes mostly to health and human services costs, which are disproportionately for people with disabilities and elders. The other place that our general fund, the second kind of significant pot is E-12 education. So it goes to our kids, goes to make sure that every student across the state has access to education, and that every elder and every person with disabilities who's eligible has access to the services that they need. And so, I think it's important for us, when we're talking about a bill that is $300 million per biennium, and we're looking down a deficit already, that we do talk about what these dollars buy. The other thing that was brought up repeatedly was veteran homelessness. And as you may know, I chaired a committee on homelessness in the 21 and 22 session. And if you do not know about the work of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on homelessness with veterans in Minnesota, please learn about it. It's actually the model for how we end homelessness for everybody. But it's the way that but it's very costly. And the way that it works is that it's significant ongoing rental assistance and services, including substance use disorder services, mental health care, and physical health care for veterans. It comes with a significant cost to the general fund. A significant cost to the general fund, and it's worth it. It's worth it. But every effort that we make to narrow the tax base, which is what this is, every effort we make to cut taxes for what may be very worthy causes, right, cuts into services for seniors across our state, services for people with disabilities, our school's ability to, you know, to meet their obligations to our students across the state. And critically, again, please check out this, what we have done in Hennepin County on veteran homelessness. But it cannot be achieved. It cannot be achieved by these kinds of efforts. It just can't. It just can't. The expense is really significant. So, you know, I appreciate us bringing this forward. I think it's hard in the current, you know, the current kind of fiscal climate. And we just have to understand, you know, I know that you guys will continue to come and ask us to reduce these taxes. It's happened most of the years that I've been in this body so far. But we've got to keep in mind what our taxes buy when we talk about reducing taxes and narrowing the tax base in a permanent way. We have to look at what's driving expenses in our state. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. You wrap it up to your bill as amended. Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the great discussion. I want to particularly thank our testifiers. I really appreciate you all taking time to come here today and share the incredible work that is going on through charities in all of our communities. To just address quickly a question of where the dollars go that Chair Gomez raised earlier, I just want to refer members to the Gambling Control Board's report for 2024, and I will just briefly quote. They have a donut-shaped chart showing all the different categories, and quote, 18% was spent on mission-related expenditures, while 1.5% remained and was carried over for future mission-related expenses. The biggest bite of the donut was state, federal, and local taxes, 28%, while license and regulatory fees were 1%. The largest amount that charities in our state are using their charitable revenue for is to pay state taxes. That is backwards, members. You have heard all of the incredible work that's going on in our communities. And who knows better than the individual families and the individual communities what the needs are? That's where community happens. That's where connection happens. So, members, I am not asking that we completely eliminate the charitable gaming tax. I'm asking that we reduce it. The fact that at over any receipts over $157,000 is taxed by the state at 33.5% is unconscionable. We saw the family where Olivia's mom was talking about. She's applied for a program. She's been told to wait in line. The state plays an important role, but the state can't meet all the needs. The state has huge waiting lists. They have eligibility requirements. Families are desperate. Homeless veterans, as Dr. Janigo testified, we have a great record on dealing with homeless veterans. I agree, Chair Gomez. And Dr. Janigo works for the Veteran Department, working on veteran homeless issues. But yet the charity she supports, my SU Maple Grove Legion, they fill the gap because the state cannot be all things to all people every time, and that's where local communities meet the needs. We need to reduce this tax so our charities have more of their own money to spend in our communities, every single community around the state, to meet these needs and build them relationships, members, the community relationships that is the strength of our communities. So I ask for your support. And I just have to say one more thing. I'm sorry, I was not going to do it, but I got to. So the comment was made that these bills are around every year. They are around every year. And now the excuse is that we're in a deficit, and we are in a deficit. But when we had an $18 billion surplus, there was still no relief for veterans. There was still no relief for charities. And now the excuse is we can't afford it. And members, we can't keep making excuses. We need to find a way to help our charities. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Robbins renews her motion that House File 169 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Robbins. Item next, House File 195, Representative Bennett. If you could please come to the table here, please. No amendments on this one. Chair Bennett, welcome to the Tax Committee. I will gladly move House File number 195 And I see that we have two witnesses. And if you could please describe your bill for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Tax Committee. Good to see you all. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to do my best to make up some of your time and get your next bill up. So I appreciate the hearing for House File 195. Briefly, before my testifiers help explain this even better, this bill exempts congressionally chartered veterans service organizations like the American Legion, VFW, from paying property taxes on buildings that they own and operate. The Department of Veterans Affairs sends out a list of eligible organizations to the Department of Revenue every year. The legislature reduced property taxes for CBOs to 1% in 2017. But despite that reduction in the property tax rate, Legions and VFWs have been struggling to keep their doors open, especially since the pandemic. I have some testifiers, and I would like to turn this over to them because they can do a much better job explaining this.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Bennett. First on my list is Barry Hendrickson. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, Barry Hendrickson, Department of Minnesota, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Adjutant Quartermaster.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Throwing out the speech. The key items. So we have 188 VFWs throughout the state of Minnesota. Approximately 107 of them have post homes, operations. That means 81 have lost them over the years, and property taxes are a factor in that. In addition, over the last 20 years, we averaged 5 VFWs going away completely from their communities, whether or not they have homes or not. That means over the last 20 years, 100 communities have lost their VFWs. That means there's no more gathering place for the veterans. There's no hall for the community. There's no place to meet. There's no donations that are going to help in the community and veterans. Tax relief, obviously, would be very important. Myself, as the adjutant, I see all the reports that come in on donations. It is amazing the work that we are doing. But with tax relief, we could do more and we can save our VFWs. As quartermaster, I see the financial reports, the audits. They are struggling. As we know, there are struggles out there and our VFWs are struggling. So I highly hope that we can get tax relief, property tax relief for our VFWs. Thank you very much.
And thank you, sir. I need to go to House Research here just a second because Mr. Engstrom has some great testimony as far as how different areas, states, cities do things on the last bill. How many, maybe it's Mr. Swanson or Ms. Hagler, how many states do not charge veterans organizations any property tax at all? Mr. Swanson?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but I do have some information on that, and I can send that to the committee.
Okay. I mean, there are some states, Mr. Swanson, that don't charge anything for veterans, right?
It's probably, Mr. Chair, but I should double check.
If you could state your name, who you represent for the record, I'd like to know how many states don't charge any property tax on VFWs.
Chairman, I'm Tim Engstrom with Bloomington American Legion Post 550. I don't have a specific answer, but I know that when we go to national conventions, we bump into states like Pennsylvania and Texas, and I think Indiana and maybe some others. I don't, and there could be more, but many of the other states don't charge property taxes on post homes. They treat it the same as a 501c3 building.
Okay. So thank you, sir. Thank you. Okay, you're up next.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dr. Christy Janigo, and I'm the American Legion Department of Minnesota Legislative Chair. We hope this year is the year where congressionally chartered veteran service organizations will finally see the elimination of property taxes for our buildings. Our posts would benefit from the passage of this bill immediately because it lifts the financial burdens. The Arcade Phelan American Legion Post 577 in St. Paul is a post that has struggled with its property tax burden. It has faced setbacks with the condition of its building that have been recently covered in the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press and is at risk of losing its building. The Anoka American Legion Post 102 is another. Last year, the Anoka Post paid nearly $15,000 for property taxes. Nearby posts Champlin and Ham Lake have turned in their charters, and the Anoka Post has been experienced in increased requests for financial support from these neighboring suburbs. Post 102's ability to serve these increasing needs is limited by its tax burden. And my own post, Osseo Maple Grove, post 172, has recently had to accommodate a new tax, the 10% tax imposed by the city of Osseo, which has caused us financial difficulties. Many 501c3 nonprofit organizations receive property tax exemptions after qualifying through their county assessor. Veterans service organizations often have other designations, such as 501c4 and 501c19. We're asking for access to the same nonprofit property tax exemptions provided to those 501c3s. Congressionally chartered veterans organizations like the Legion have a federal requirement of reporting our volunteer and other charitable efforts directly to Congress annually. And because of that accountability, it does make sense for us to pay zero property taxes. As Tim Engstrom mentioned, there are a handful of states that provide the same benefit as a recognition of good veteran service organizations and their work in the community, and we'd like to see Minnesota among them. As far as the county property tax assessor's office, they do have confusion with the statute as it is today, and we think it would save taxpayers across our 87 Minnesota counties because of the workload and inefficiencies that are inevitably covered by our taxpayers. Our posts in Minnesota are increasingly diverse as veterans are seeking places of refuge where they can relax in the camaraderie of like-minded people who have shared experiences. Veterans tend to be slow to trust other people, and that can lead to isolation. We need social connection as much as other people do, and perhaps more, because many do not understand what some of us have been through protecting this country and its freedoms. The American Legion Department of Minnesota has a total of 531 posts, but more than half of our posts already don't have buildings. 260 of our posts have buildings. Of course, several are struggling and at risk of closure in the near future. The communities of Stillwater, Marshall, Northfield, Waite Park, Coon Rapids, and a number of them in the metro area have all had to sell their buildings to survive in recent history. How many more communities will need to lose their gathering center for charity fundraising and activities before relief is provided? Thank you for hearing this bill today, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you for that testimony. So we'll take questions from members to Mr. Hendrickson and Dr. Janigo. Does the department wish to testify on this bill? Okay. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this forward. I know these organizations mean a lot to our communities, and Hopkins alone, even though we're only 2 by 2 miles, we have a VFW, American Legion, and an Elks Club. And it's been a while since I've been a property tax chair, so I just need a refresher. Can I ask nonpartisan staff a quick question?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nonpartisan staff, currently, don't we exempt the portions of the property that aren't revenue generating, but we tax the portions of the property that are revenue generating? Maybe just remind me of how our legions, our VFWs are taxed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, Representative Bennett sort of alluded to this a little bit in her opening remarks, but there is a reduced classification rate for the local portion of property taxes paid by these organizations, and that is a rate of 1%. There are actually two different classifications for congressionally chartered veterans organizations. Both have the 1% rate for local taxes, but one of those classifications is subject to the state general levy and the other is not. The difference between those two classifications is it has to do with how often the facility is used for revenue generating activities. For those that aren't or are only used for revenue generating activities for a small number of days within a year, they're not subject to the state general levy. For those that do have more days of revenue generating activity, they can still get the reduced classification rate of 1%, provided that they make donations at least equal to the amount of tax that they paid in the prior year. But those properties are still subject to the state general levy.
Chair Joachim.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm glad I asked because I forgot how complicated it was. So I just to comment more, anytime we do an exclusion, it shifts onto other properties. And I know I'm a little more sensitive to this in Hopkins because we are only 2 by 2 miles and we have a few of these organizations. But it's also about the fairness if they're running a food establishment and a bar and then not to have to pay that while the other bar down the street might, because people only usually pick or choose where they're going to go, and they'll only buy, they used to, one of my a former legislators said, you know, they're only going to pick up lunch, a hamburger lunch spot once a day, not twice. So just kind of worry a little bit about the fairness for the other organizations.
Well, I'm into three times a day.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just
thank
so you know. Questions from members to Chair Bennett or the witnesses or the testifier? Chair Gomez? Okay. I will then renew my motion that House File 195.
Mr. Chair, may I close?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got that on my list. Representative Bennett closing.
Excuse me for the interruption.
I got it right here.
I just wanted to say one more thing, and I thank you to both my testifiers and the committee for also for hearing this, and Mr. Chair for hearing this bill as well. I just want to mention, in my local community of Albert Lea, I've been to our American Legion quite often, and the VFW there as well, and then around to some of the other little communities, Minnesota Lake, Glenville, Alden. These community, these VFWs and American Legions are for the veterans, but they're also really a community center. Matter of fact, I went to Minnesota Lake this last summer, I believe it was, because the local volunteer fire department was having a pork chop feed to raise funds, and they used the American Legion there. So these are used for many, many purposes. And then finally, I'll just say one of my favorite things about the American Legion and our veterans is the Honor Guard group that in Albert Lea, when I've attended any funerals of veterans, those honor guards, the men and women who served us, are there every time, rain or shine, whatever it is, to honor that veteran with that service. So I thank our veterans, and I hope our committee can make this really small change that will be a huge difference for our veterans and communities. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Bennett. Totally agree with your last comments there. I mean, representing the city of Preston, with a veterans home and a veterans cemetery, the veterans that volunteer for all those events, every honor guard, they're quite amazing. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 195 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you to the witnesses, and thank you, Chair Bennett. Let's go to House File 194, Representative Knudsen. Welcome to the committee, Representative Knudsen. I will move House File 194 so it's before the committee. Please present your bill. And do we have any testifiers? No, okay.
Yep.
We do? Oh, John Ulrich. John Ulrich here? Do you want to join Representative Knudsen, please? Okay. I got to work on my reading abilities. So I will move House File 194, so it's before the committee. Representative Knudsen, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Vice Chair Joy. Thank you, Lee Gomez. And thank you, members, for allowing me to present House File 194 to you today. This bill relates to the Disabled Veteran Homestead Property Tax Exclusion Program. This program provides a property tax benefit to qualifying veterans by reducing the value of their home for property tax purposes. Surviving spouses of disabled veterans continue to receive the exclusion benefit after the veteran dies until or unless the surviving spouse remarries. To qualify for the property tax exclusion, veterans must be honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces and be certified by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs as having a service-connected disability. Disabled veterans apply for the exclusion through their county's assessor's office. When the legislature enacted this program in 2008, the exclusion amounts were $300,000 for a 100% and permanently disabled veteran, $150,000 for a veteran with a 70% disability rating. The valuation exclusion amounts have not been increased in the 17 years that this program has been in existence. In that time, the value of property and homesteads has increased greatly. According to the Consumer Price Index, $300,000 in 2008 is the equivalent purchasing power to $439,759 today. $150,000 in 2008 has the equivalent purchasing power of $218,879 today. These figures demonstrate the urgent need to increase the valuation amounts of the disabled veterans' property home tax property tax exclusion. House File 194 increases the exclusion amount for 100% totally and permanently disabled veterans to $400,000. The exclusion amount for a veteran with 70% disability rating to $200,000. I do have one testifier with me today, and I'd like to allow him to present right now.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is John Ulrich. I'm from Morrison County, and I'm here today as a disabled veteran. I am a veteran with 100% permanent disability. I retired from the United States Army on October 30th, 2015, on the last day of October of my 60th birthday, a mandatory removal. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2021 and still fighting the fight. I was given the disability rating when I retired in 2015. I served 32 years, and 4.5 of those years was in Iraq and Afghanistan. We were exposed to many hazards like the burn pits and chemicals unknown to us. I believe the proposed market value exclusion for the 70% and 100% disabled veterans should be as stated in the bill. $200,000 for 70% and $400,000 for 100% disability. Please try to remember that we were serving in places where it was hazardous to our health. The percentage of disabled veterans in Minnesota is a very small amount, and as taxpayers, we should give a little for what we got from our service members. Some of our people think that our fellow taxpayers would be picking up the tab for why we don't find. What we should do is find some poor run program and reallocate those funds to one of these programs. And hopefully it wouldn't be a mandate from the state. Maybe this will come out of the general fund. One of my legislator friends, him and I was talking about it this morning, and I think that would be a real wise move to go so that it doesn't burden the rest of the property taxpayers in our counties. Take the time to think about the disabled veteran that may have a large family and can no longer work trying to support their family. A lot of times we get disability ratings. I was injured in Afghanistan, so that's where mine came from. However, what I tried to point out was in 2021, 5 years after I retired, I was diagnosed with large B-cell lymphoma. It has come back 3 times. I'm still in it for the fight. Next week after our convention, I will be going to the university for a T-cell transplant, and hopefully that will get rid of it. But here's the point I'm trying to make. I don't have to have the exemption because I planned my life and I stayed in the military a long time and I own a farm and that kind of thing. But there are young people that come out and they have a disability and they wind up with cancer and that kind of thing, but they might be less than 30 years old and they have a family, and every dime that helps those people is appreciated. It makes their life a little bit easier. Or the spouse, the service member passes away and the spouse needs to pick up that tax exempt so because their income's gonna change. I had lost one soldier in Iraq, and that happened with that family. But there was enough people around that picked up the slack so that they made it through. To finish this up, I respectfully request that each committee member would vote yes for this bill. And today I'm proud to, for the very first time since I retired, I signed this document, John Ulrich, Chief Warrant Officer for a retired United States Army. And I'm really glad to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Ulrich. Questions, Representative Hewitt?
Mr. Chair, more of a statement here. Some of you know, some of you don't know, that my dad was 100% from World War II. As a family member, you know, I had seven other siblings. What we lived with and how things went and how this affected the family was great. And it was during the 70s that a lot of these programs weren't implemented yet. As we all know, the mistakes we made with our vets in the 70s, I mean, another story, my brother died in Vietnam. And so I think that these programs are really, like the testifier was saying, is that, you know, let's give these families some room to breathe, because that's what we needed in many cases with my father, who was in and out of the VA hospital and up in St. Cloud, and, you know, all that played on the family. And so this is one thing little we can do, as well as when the person is deceased. That didn't happen in our case, but that this can transfer to living spouses and stuff like that. I thank the country for doing this. I thank the state for doing this, but I think we need to extend it. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the leniency.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Knutson, and to your testifier, thank you for your service. Thank you for being here, and we all wish you the best.
I was just doing my job.
Thank you, Mr. Ulrich.
Members, I just want to remind us all of how the floor debate went on the House tax bill last year. I believe at the time this was an amendment offered on the floor, and at first, Chair Gomez did not support it, and Representative Newton, who retired after last session, made an impassioned speech about the importance of this for our veterans and how it hasn't been updated in so many years. And there was a beautiful bipartisan moment where Chair Gomez went and shook Representative Newton's hand, and we had a unanimous vote supporting this on the House floor last year. And then, who knows how, in that debacle at the end of session, that language that was in the House bill was not in the final mess that passed that last night of session. So we had unanimous support for this last year on the House floor, and I hope that we can do it again, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else from the audience which testify on behalf of or with concerns on this bill? And the department? You're fine? Yeah. Okay, with that, any other member questions? Representative Knutson, or Chair Gomez? Representative Knutson?
Sir, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Kristen. You basically just summed up my closing. Last year, we did pass this unanimously on the House floor as an amendment to the tax bill. This is long overdue. This is the least we can do for the people that have given everything to serve and protect our country. I am very hopeful that this year is the year. Our veterans are waiting and they're watching. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Knutson, and thank you to your witness. Hillman, where is Hillman? Do you know where Hillman is? By what?
East of Little Falls.
East of Little Falls?
Yeah,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Ulrich. Thank you, Representative Knutson. I'll renew my motion that House File 194 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, Representative Norris. And Representative Norris, welcome to your committee. Representative Norris moves House File 1756. Is there an amendment? No amendments. Okay. So we've got two witnesses here and a two-year bill. Representative Norris, is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the bill? Does the department wish to weigh in at this time? Okay, thank you.
It's the
Welcome to your committee, sir. If you could please present your bill. You have moved House File 1756.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard. It's a little bit, a slightly different version of the one that we just heard. But overall, homestead market value exclusion for disabled veterans is really an important tool for us to help with the financial burdens that come along with a service-connected disability, but also a way for us as Minnesotans to honor the sacrifice that these service members and veterans and their family members have made on behalf of our state and on behalf of our country. This bill includes the same adjustment to the base for the exclusion that was in the Representative Knutson bill, but it also includes a number of other provisions that I found to be really important in my conversations talking to veterans in my district and across the state of Minnesota. I'll highlight just briefly some of those differences. First, it includes an adjustment for inflation in the exclusion base. So, you know, we just heard that one of the challenges is this hasn't been updated, the base, in years. And so as if we pass the bill, you know, without that inflation adjustment, the value starts eroding the day after the bill is enacted into law. So this would address that challenge. It would also make some adjustments to service member eligibility to clarify that a service member who has not yet been discharged but has that 70% or higher disability rating would also be eligible for the exclusion. We also know that spouses are impacted when a service member or veteran has a disability, and so this bill addressed some of the challenges around that as well. First, it eliminates the two-year window for a surviving spouse to claim this exclusion. You know, when a service member passes, there's so many things that a spouse is going through. The last thing they're thinking about is property tax paperwork. So this eliminates that short window for them to file the paperwork to claim this exclusion. It also deals with an issue where sometimes if the veteran or the service member is on active duty outside the state of Minnesota, both the service member and the spouse may be living outside of Minnesota, the event that causes the disability occurs or the service member passes, and it would allow when that spouse, the surviving spouse, moves back to Minnesota to claim the exclusion. And lastly, it addresses some of the issues around kind of creating a disincentive for those surviving spouses to remarry, which is not an intended outcome of this exclusion, and also some unintended consequences that can sometimes limit the ability of the surviving spouse to move into a home that's better, a better fit for them as they downsize, might need to move to perhaps a one-level home as they age, those sorts of things. So it's really designed to address some of the challenges that the veterans community has seen over the years and make this homestead market value exclusion work even better for disabled veterans and their families.
Thank you very much, Representative. Let's go to Trent Dilks. If you could please state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Trent Dilks. I'm the Legislative Director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill. I've been working on this issue, and I've been working for Minnesota's disabled veterans for the past 11 years. We have been working on property tax exclusion, so much so that I got the nickname Property Tax Guy among the veterans world. Early on, I would get a call, a session, and it would be one veteran saying, hey, the $300,000 doesn't cover my property tax. Could we look at getting it increased? And I would say, well, we're working on expanding it for surviving spouses. We're working on some of these other issues, but I appreciate your input. Recently, 4 out of 5 legislative calls that I take are veterans who are worried about staying in their homes because of their property tax. This is no longer a one-off scenario. This is all across the state, metro and rural, that veterans are feeling the pinch. One stands out specifically to me, and that is a Vietnam veteran who is about to pass away from his Agent Orange-related illnesses. He called me in tears. He is worried that his surviving spouse will not be able to stay in the home they bought in Hennepin County after he got back from Vietnam in 1971. Through no fault of their own, they've lived in an area where the property values have gone up, even as their home has remained modest, where they raised. Their surviving spouse will see a 59% reduction in her VA benefits when the veteran passes away. They have seen a property tax bill that has multiplied over and over again. I'm hearing about this from veterans all across Minnesota. They're scared that they won't be able to stay in their homes. And if you know veterans, they're scared for their families. I know there's a lot about the property tax shifts. I understand that. I've been working on this a lot. So I went into the Department of Revenue. I will not go through them all, Mr. Chair, but a couple to highlight. Big Stone County, if you take the total market value and then you take the value excluded, that's what all these numbers will be. The value excluded for the 70 and the 100 percenters, 0.39%. If you go to Carver County, 0.29%. If you go down to, let's see, Hennepin here, let's go with one of the big ones. Hennepin County, 0.21%. We are not talking about a large percentage of the property values that are being excluded. If I take the highest one, so you know I'm not cherry picking, Carleton County is at 1.51%. Carleton County, under an increase in this, would be one of the least impacted because they still have a median home value somewhere between $220,000 and $240,000. So the only homes that would be affected by the top number of the 100% are those who are severely service-connected disabled veterans in non-agricultural homes valued at over $300,000, $80,000 more than the county's median home value. So when we talk about the shifts in greater Minnesota, I will supply this to your staff, Mr. Chair, but the overall property shifts, there are only three counties in Minnesota where it's at 1%. Everything else is a fraction of 1%. When we look at doing this for the most severely disabled veterans. surviving spouses, I was just looking at it. There's a Minnesota service member who was part of the 82nd Airborne, passed away in Fort Bragg in his 20s, left behind his wife who he had brought with him from Minnesota, and they had a young child. He passed away in a helicopter crash. Had she wanted to come back to Minnesota after he died to be near her family, we would not have given her the property tax value exclusion. I can't believe that was our intent. I've been working on this for over a decade. I've never heard anybody say that would be the intent to leave her out. And so that's just one of the important provisions that I think, even if we end up compromising, and I understand some may need to come out, we're talking about three or four. But those three or four are extremely important, like the surviving spouses of those who have moved away to be with their service member and want to come home after they die.
Okay, members, we're going to adjourn in 3 minutes so we can get over to the floor session. I want to give members a little bit of time to get over there. So if you could wrap it up, then we'll go to the next witness, and we won't be able to hear my bill. What? Oh, we have to? Oh, I guess we'll hear my bill. Dr. Janigo, do you got anything to say here on this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Janigo, American Legion Department of Minnesota. I just want to add to that that in the past there's been a lot of misinformation about the cost of this bill, with some state lawmakers and county commissioners fearing that they won't be elected in the future for driving costs to taxpayers. There's actually no cost to the state and no cost to local governments. As Trent Dilks outlined, it is a shift of the tax burden from eligible veterans and surviving spouses to the rest of the tax base, and it is a very small fraction. Trent outlined a range of 0.1% to 1.51%, with the average shift being 0.54%. So with the additional provisions in this bill, we're estimating around an additional 0.03% of shifts across Minnesota. So when we've talked to Minnesotans, many have said that they will gladly pay a few more dollars on their property taxes to help veterans in their communities. I do want to outline that this bill is one of many bills that are out there for this matter. This is the one that the Commander's Task Force supports, or all eight congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, because it is the most comprehensive and tackles all of the issues we've been fighting for the past many years. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Norris, to wrap it up.
Thank you, Chair Davis. I want to thank my testifiers.
Representative Gomez, any
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Davis. I want to thank my testifiers for joining me. There's great bipartisan support for this. I look forward to working with Representative Knutson to hopefully get this across the finish line.
Representative Norris renews his motion that House File, what House File is it?
190.
House File 1756 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you to the witnesses. Thank you, Representative Norris. I will now move House File 2133 being right up front. This is simply a vehicle bill, and I'm going to try and find a few more. And Chair Gomez, maybe you could find a couple. We may need these down the road. I will move the H2133A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Any discussion? Does the department have a position on my vehicle bill? Oh, yeah. You scared me. Okay, so any member questions? I'll renew my motion that House File 2133 as amended be sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, over to the House floor. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.